it doesn't matter what you say, it's about how you act. And I often feel that if I behave as a leader in the same way as I do when I'm a parent, trying to walk the talk rather than just telling we don't eat candy other than on Saturdays. If I eat candy Wednesday, my kids will do that as well. To me, that is probably the most important thing. And it goes without saying that there is no patent solution how to implement it throughout an organization. But consistency in terms of values being important, and to show by example that we listen to people.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and develop organizations with a remarkably healthy culture that can positively impact all of its stakeholders. Every other Thursday, we drop hour-long conversations with world-leading researchers and experts on culture, ethics, change, and leadership. My name is Tobias Sturesson, and I'm your host and the co-founder of Heart Management. Whenever a senior executive at Volvo Cars had a conversation, they would say something about the importance of safety. I heard this from a friend who had been part of the management team of the Swedish but Chinese-owned car maker several years ago. Her words intrigued me. A critical question that we aim to explore in this podcast is how an organization can move past nice-sounding words to truly integrates values that guide business decisions. In his insightful Harvard Business Review article, Make Your Values Mean Something, bestselling author Patrick Lencioni defines core values as the deeply ingrained principles that guide all of a company's actions and serve as its cultural cornerstone. They are the source of a company's distinctiveness and must be maintained at all costs. Many companies have value statements, I'm sure your organization does, but few seem to have genuinely identified a set of core values that they actually live by and that are allowed to cost something. While far from perfect, Volvo Cars seems to be somewhat of an exception. As you'll hear in today's conversation, they have since early on put a high value on quality and safety that really have shaped their business, and in later years they've aimed to put a similar focus on care for the environment. For those of you who don't know, Volvo Cars is a premium car maker. The company, founded in 1927, has about 40,000 employees worldwide with production facilities in Sweden, Belgium, the US, and in China. In 1959, the company introduced the three-point safety belt as standard in their newest car model. They chose to waive their patent rights to benefit all car makers, and the three-point safety belt is estimated to have saved over 1 million lives globally. In 1976, Volvo was chosen as a safety benchmark by the US government. In 1978, they invented the booster cushion for children, and many other safety innovations have followed. Several years ago, they defined a really powerful safety vision that no one should be killed or seriously injured in a new Volvo. I had the privilege of interviewing Maria Hemberg, General Counsel and Chief Legal Officer and part of the executive management team at Volvo Cars. Maria is a lawyer and has been in charge of building up ethics and compliance at Volvo Cars over the last decade. We had a wide-ranging conversation about what it means to live one's values, how Volvo Cars thinks about ethics, and how they are meeting with the radical shifts in the car industry around sustainability. I hope you will find it really helpful. So, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Maria Hemberg. Maria, it's really an honor to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
So, you've been with Volvo Cars for more than a decade, and I just wanted to start by asking you, what makes you
proud and excited about your work at Volvo Cars? Maybe it's a big question, but a few things.
I think two key elements worth mentioning is the fact that I'm extremely proud of my teams and the organization I've been able and allowed to develop here at Volvo Cars. All my teams are really seen as business partners to the organization. And I think when you are responsible for areas like legal, compliance, IP, etc., if you want to be effective, you have to really be seen as a business partner. So that is something I'm extremely proud of. I'm also obviously extremely happy to have been with Volvo Cars during such an exciting period. We have transformed a lot the last decade, and that journey, I think it's unheard of to start with a company struggling for its survival, taking it all the way up to the completion of an IPO last year. That's really something that makes me very proud and excited to have been part of.
That's so helpful. And we're gonna go into a lot of conversation on values and ethics here. But I just wanted to stop at something that you said, and you talked about how you've been able to really make the ethics and compliance function to really be a business partner. And I know for many other other people in ethics and compliance, but also for the many of our listeners who are in HR, that can sometimes be a struggle, that you're seen as not really this kind of business critical function, or that you're more seen as, I guess in ethics and compliance, maybe sometimes seen as a nuisance or somebody who's kind of creating problems in that sense, or bringing up hard conversations. So what has been important part of making sure that has been kind of the perspective within the organization, and maybe both in terms of the work that you've done, but maybe also in terms of the kind of attitude from the senior leadership?
I think it all starts with what are the values, what is the culture, in Volvo Cars, we have what we often refer to our we culture, which is built on a number of different pillars and collaboration, making a difference, and really be curious are the key elements in our culture. And what we have fostered in my teams is very much to really be there to help the business. And we have promised ourselves that we should never say no to things other than if it is absolutely something totally crazy and prohibited or ethically wrong people want to do. We should always try to see what's in it for the company. And instead of saying, no, you can't do that, try to come up with a solution where we try to help them make whatever vision or strategic initiative come through. So really try to understand what's behind the request, what's behind the wish, and translate that into something which is both ethically and responsibly made and in line with our policies and everything. Because I think historically many legal departments and compliance teams have been seen as the police officers. I think if you jointly agree that is not our role and that is not how we want to be, you have a different starting point. To always ask the why question whenever you get a request from the organization is often very helpful, and it creates a common... You share the problem with the business, and that is healthy for the collaboration. And I also think that we are very much helped by our brand, because the Volvo brand was established almost 100 years ago. It was built on the pillar safety and quality, and later on environment and sustainability was added as a core element of what we represent and what we stand for. And that has developed over the years, but I think doing the right thing, make sure that whatever products we provide, it's there to protect the people, it's there to protect the planet and society, and that kind of purpose is also providing a lot of guidance to the organization. And if you have such values, such brand pillars, it's simply not possible to do things in a non-responsible manner. So therefore, I think all my functions are perhaps having a slightly easier task than you would have had in a company where you based your business on different brand values and pillars.
That's really, really helpful. And I wanted to talk about these pillars. And I think that corporate values are so often some very fluffy words that have minimal impact, or I would say minimal impact on the business, or actually a negative impact on the business, because it's clear to everyone that we don't live by them. And however, at Volvo, I think many have seen a real commitment. And I think it's important to always say no company, at least in my view, does this perfectly. Every company fails in different ways. So you cannot look for perfection, because you're not going to find it. But I think it's a question of having a real commitment and really striving for it and doing the hard decisions, and that there's been a real commitment to safety, quality, and care for the environment. And you talk a little bit about the long history, and I just wanted to ask you, what is kind of, because I think it's interesting if we look at safety, for example, that it's actually been something that has been driving innovations like the three-point belt and stuff like that, and also some of the decisions of Volvo choosing to share some of those innovations with the world and not kind of keeping it for themselves. So what could you tell us something a bit more about the history behind this, for example, the commitment to safety and how that came about, and kind of how you make sure that it actually guides the business over time?
And I think it goes back already to the founder's basic principle that we should provide cars that were safe and protected the people who were in the cars. And then that element has evolved over time. Many years ago, set as a vision that no one should be killed or seriously injured in a new Volvo car. And that is, of course, a very aggressive ambition. And when that was set, we were far from being in a position to deliver on that. But it set such a clear direction that there is no limit in terms of what we should aim for and what should be the goal. Now we are expanding that vision to go beyond the vehicle and the people in the vehicle. And we also try to embrace people in pedestrians, people in other cars, etc. And I think that is a very important tool to aim high and really gather the people around something which is tangible. And it's not so that that we can use this as a marketing tool. It's more as an element to show that, yes, that is what we stand for.
And I think that is such a powerful picture. And I think about a friend of mine who's been part of the management team at Volvo Cars, who told me that her experience was that kind of whenever senior leaders opened their mouth, they would talk about safety. And she said that she's very seldom experienced companies where values are actually something that is truly valued, but at Volvo Cars, around safety, that was actually something that was very much talked about. And what is a way that kind of you make sure at the company that, because I think both of us, we know about things like ethical fading, which is something we've talked a lot about on this podcast, and how we can easily, when we look at decisions, we can easily think, oh, this is just an engineering decision, or this is just a financial decision, and we kind of let go of our values. And I think it's something that we actually have to be very intentional about putting it on the agenda. So what are some ways that Volvo Cars does that?
I think being consistent in how you communicate is very important. And I don't think there has ever been a strategy document developed in this company where the word safety is missing. It's always there. And some years back when I was working very much in setting our new sustainability strategy, which is obviously very much included in the overall strategy, we concluded that to us, safety is part of also sustainability, because it's very much associated with the human-centric and the caring element of what is a sustainable way of conducting business. And if you save life, if you protect people, it's extremely strong. So I would say consistency and never lose track on this element has probably been very crucial. And of course, in some periods, certain elements are less popular to talk about, and it may not be the most sexy selling argument to talk about safety. But I think we as a company, we have been very true to our values and purpose, always keeping safety there, regardless of the trends.
I think that aspect of it, as you said, because I think many times I hear companies talk about, for example, that making sustainability a really important part of the business. But then when you look at their strategy documents, and especially the parts, because yes, it might be in the strategy document, but especially the parts that the business will actually be talking about, like which kind of spells out, okay, this is what we are going to deliver on 1 year or 3 years or 5 years, that aspect is missing. And it's only the financial goals that we actually talk about and measure, and that is actually driving business. What's your view of that?
I think sustainability can't be just words. It's not about making a lot of communication to the external world just to please the audience. We start with where can we actually make a difference, and how do we bring that to life? I think the people in our organization, they are also very sincere and want things to be tangible. So it wouldn't fly for us to just do a lot of talking. It's very much about embedding it in everything we do.
Of course, as we talk about sustainability, I mean, the car industry is going through a really momentous shift right now towards electric vehicles. And just recently, California, for example, which I think is one of the state that buys the most vehicles, that decided to ban sales on new gas vehicles in 2035. And I think, of course, when it comes to sustainability, and it's easy for us to want the simple solutions. We think like electric vehicle good, gas vehicle bad. But of course, it's a lot more complex than that. And now we see the challenges of the electric grid. We see also, of course, for some of the things that we need to build electric vehicles, they might come from places that are unstable and so on. So it's a much more multifaceted, and we cannot disconnect it from human rights and so on. And I wanted to ask you, what are some, in terms of the most challenging issues that you think Volvo Cars is navigating right now? Because I think when we talk about values, it really comes down to the place where it actually costs us something, where there's actually, I used to say that values that are not allowed to cost us something are not worth anything either. So what are some of those issues that you see as the most challenging right now, and that is actually costly in that sense?
I think the responsible sourcing part, and how to make sure that you really have the supply chain and the supplier base you want to have, I think that is the trickiest part, because being an automotive player, the amount of suppliers is immense, and you have so many tiers, and to really create an effective and transparent and good supply chain all the way down. I think that is the biggest hurdle for everyone. And I think the industry is lying if they tell that everything is perfect. But it's a lot of heavy lifting, and it's about being firm on what are your requirements. We developed quite a number of years ago our code of business code of conduct for business partner. And we did that because we felt that we needed to start the ethical dialogue with our partners, where we address everything from importance to not have forced labor, not have child labor, to corruption issues. Yeah, the traditional list. And that was, of course, when we started that effort, still a bit uncommon, and many people felt that why should we spend time on this and why do we need to do all this extra work? But I think a couple of years after the introduction of that code, we all realized that it was good that we had started the journey, because soon the demand from society came on top of our own internal demands. And I think the good thing is that technology as blockchain and other things are also helping us to get further traceability into the supply chain. And so I think there is a lot of positive things going on, because at the end of the day, it's really about making sure that the policies are implemented and adhered to. But we all know that constant monitoring, auditing is a must, because otherwise you end up having a gap somewhere in the chain. So I think that is the main challenge, if you ask me. And then you obviously have also the problems with lack of transparency in certain parts of the world. We know that a lot of important raw material come from these areas. And there I would say the burden put on the companies is probably a little bit unfair, because if society, if our political environment can't help those problems, how on earth shall the companies be able to address the problems? We try to do what we can, but we can't fix everything on our own.
I wanted to ask you about one example, and I think this is such an important thing to reflect on in every organization. And one example where in hindsight that you see that Volvo failed to live up to its values, and kind of how the company has dealt with and learned from that.
I'm not sure if it is a failure, but I think what we have learned is that we have, for example, carried out what we call people policy assessments in very many of our plants, and try to understand how do we work with the human rights questions, with good labor conditions, etc. And I think what we learned in that exercise is that what may be obvious to us is not obvious to other players, other companies, because we need to acknowledge that if you are in an environment where certain practices are accepted, you have a gap of sharing a common ground. So it's very easy for people to say, yes, we are compliant. But when you start to really discuss what does it mean, you realize that there is a need to help educate, create awareness, and really make it understandable what is this meaning in reality. And I think there we have understood via our assessments that you can change people's attitude much more if you dare to take the fight and take the dialogue, because it's not because people want to do wrong things or bad things And the gray zone between what is good and bad is also a sliding scale. So I think the learning was more dare to take dialogues when you will actually change things beyond what is sticking to the legal requirements.
That's super, super helpful. And I talked to Hiltud Vano, who came in as the chief ethics officer at Volkswagen after the emissions scandal. And we talked about how the company had a self-image that they were the benchmark and that they didn't need to listen to outside voices or concerns. And I'm thinking that the idea that we are a good company with great values, which is, of course, something we all want to aspire to, but the assumption that we are can sometimes blind us and we don't see our own vulnerability. And I think that that is an example of something they realized at Volkswagen. And how do you work to mitigate that? How do you work to make sure that we're not just kind of assuming that we are living these values, that we are this good Swedish company or whatever, but that we're actually understand that we have vulnerabilities and that we are actively seeking them out?
I think one of the key aspects here is really to make sure that you have leaders who are good listeners. You also need to have leaders who are there to and willing to discuss dilemmas and show that we are vulnerable, that we may not always be perfect, and to take the time to take those tough discussions and simply debate, is this good for business? Is it ethically correct? Or what should be our choice in this? Not just do things without reflecting. And we have, since a couple of years, something that we call responsible business dialogues. I don't know, it's probably 2-3 times every year, we try to develop a bit of a toolkit for our leaders, where we take an example. It can be the Dieselgate scandal. We package it with some pre-read and open questions, simply to have a dialogue. This happened somewhere else. Why didn't it happen in our company? And I think that is one way of making sure that you reflect upon your own behaviors. Because if you look at and discuss an example of wrongdoing, it's much easier to come across, yes, but do we actually do something which may not be perfect in another area? So making sure that we, with some regularity, spend 20 minutes on these conversations, I think is one of the initiatives we have introduced.
And I think connected to that, and I think that's a great example. I think it's this aspect of how do we ensure that people really feel safe to raise concerns without retaliation? And of course, it's something that it's very easy to write on a website that here nobody's going to face retaliation. But and I mean, I see this working with organizations, that I see a culture of silence taking so many different shapes and forms and phases in different organizations. In some, it might be that you've had some really a bit arrogant leaders who would very clearly retaliate. But it might also be a culture where we just don't talk about problems, where it's like, here, you should just kind of be positive and upbeat and talk about opportunities. And if you talk about something that is felt like a problem or a concern, then you feel like you're kind of the odd one out and you don't want to be that and you want to fit in. So how do you work like in a practical way? And I know, of course, I mean, we need to have all the kind of the whistleblower lines and all those things in place. But when we think about the culture to actually make people, because I think a lot of organizations struggle with this, and I know they do. And I know HR leaders and senior leaders and ethics leaders who struggle with actually making that a reality. And of course, it doesn't just need to be about the big things, but it can be about the small things, which is where we want to catch things. So how in a practical way do you make sure that people actually feel safe to raise concerns? What are some things that you've learned work?
think it very much starts with the leaders, the CEO and the management team sending the right tone from the top. And I think as we speak, we are now, you know, we got our new CEO on board earlier this year, and he is very much focusing on revitalizing our values, making sure that we have a clear blueprint, setting the direction for all 40 plus thousand employees, and to have every now and then focus on values, and the soft part is very important because that sets the tone from the top in a very good way. And I think to me, it's very much, it doesn't matter what you say, it's about how you act. And I often feel that if I behave as a leader in the same way as I do when I'm a parent, trying to walk the talk rather than just telling we don't eat candy other than on Saturdays. If I eat candy Wednesday, my kids will do that as well. So to me, that is probably the most important thing. And it goes without saying that there is no patent solution how to implement it throughout an organization. But consistency in terms of values being important, and to show by example that we listen to people. We are, as we speak, changing our way of working in the top management segments. We have created a small management team together with an extended, quite wide team, and that we do because we want to have more people engaged who are subject matter experts, and that we really feel that we get the right input. And I think having a more open dialogue around how decisions are prepared and brought into the decision-making process is one important example of how you can create the openness, because if people are invited, they have the opportunity to speak up. And when someone speaks up, you have to be careful so you don't offend that person, so that he or she feels that I spoke up and they didn't really like what I said, and I will never do it again. So when you get information which may not be the nicest one or the most positive message, I think you as a leader, you need to take a step back and reflect before you jump to conclusions or whatever you feel you need to do. So it's about leadership.
I think that's so true, and you can't get away from those signals. And I was thinking, I was reflecting on it, meeting with a leadership team where the CEO came in late to the meeting, and I saw the frustration the others had about that, and I saw how frustrated they were when he entered, but nobody raised it with him when he came in. And my first thought was, oh, but you don't say that to the CEO. But then I thought, no, that's exactly what you should say to the CEO. And I mean, I talked to them about that, because if we want to talk about psychological safety and speaking up, then it has to start here in this group. What are some things that, like, management team specifically can think about? Because I think that's where it, of course, can feel very high stakes as well, lifting something with the CEO or somebody else.
Yeah, and I think just by applying an open door policy where people, regardless if they are your direct report or somewhere else in the organization, feel that they can just enter into your room and share with you whatever concerns or remarks they may have, I think that is very important. And I have, at least during my years, had a lot of people coming to me raising questions, and I see it very much as my role to help them bring forward whatever concerns there are, because being a general counsel often means that you have more of a balancing role. You are not as affected by something, so you can play a bit more neutral and convey messages that perhaps are not possible to put forward somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think when, as we talk about like a culture of responsible business, or we could talk about a culture of integrity and ethics, and what are, of course, we talk about the importance of speaking up, the importance of raising dilemmas and so on. What are some other aspects that you think of, things that you are intentionally doing to ensure that you actually build that type of culture, that it's not just a policy document, but it's actually something that is kind of being driven into the culture?
I think you come a long way by way of being curious and being eager to understand why something should be done, because simply by asking those questions and understand the bigger picture and the underlying purpose, you can really safeguard that the responsible dimension is well managed. That is something that I see that my entire team is very much focusing on. They are good role models when they interact in various projects. And I don't think you need to have that many people who come with that background and that dimension to get the snowball rolling. You can have 20 people, everyone is silent, and then you have someone who dares to pose the uncomfortable or awkward questions, and then it starts. So having those people out in the organization, I think is tremendously helpful. And that is the culture we try to foster in my teams as we see that we can play an important role. And I can obviously not be in all spots personally, but if I have a team of 100 doing it in all parts of the world, it makes a huge difference.
I really like this concept of the curiosity. And could you give one practical example of what it might look like to kind of to act from that sense of curiosity to spark conversations that are, as you say, important for building this culture?
I think often when you are a part of the support function, someone comes to you and say, I need an agreement. We are planning to do this and this. And that person may have received orders from somewhere in his or her organization, not necessarily getting the full picture or getting the full brief, but simply executing. And if you are the lawyer supporting something, you can obviously not just pull a template out of a drawer. You need to understand the context. And if you are a good company lawyer, you then sit down with whoever comes to you and pose all those questions. And that is as one example where sometimes they conclude, oh, this was probably not a good idea to do this. We didn't think it through. Or as the very obvious question to pose nowadays, who is your counterparty? Who do we plan to do this with? I have had a number of situations during the years where we have had very nice opportunities and we have simply concluded, no, that's not the company we want to do business. We do a background check and conclude that they seem to have a history we don't want to be involved in doing business with. So that's another example of how the curiosity can be translated into something helpful to ensure that we conduct business in a good manner.
So final question before we wrap this up, just speaking to, and I know, of course, your field is ethics and compliance. We have a lot of ethics professionals listening to this, but we also have a lot of HR professionals and leaders. And I'm just thinking, as we think about really building that responsible culture, building that culture of integrity that I think every organization, whether you're 50 people or you are 50,000 people, you want to see that. And I think that's such an important part of a healthy culture. So what is just one kind of tip or just one thing you would encourage people to do that can really help towards that end goal?
I would say that whoever you are and wherever you are in an organization, you should always make sure that you are true to your own values. And we often talk about having a good ethical compass. And I think that is something most people are equipped with. It's often the context which makes them do stupid things. What I try to convey to people around me is that do what you can stand up for and defend if someone is asking you about the matter. Can you talk to your neighbor about it, provided you are not bound by confidentiality? Can you talk to a journalist? And the best thing, can you look yourself into the mirror and be proud of what you have done? I think that is very easy to bear with you and execute on.
Thank you so much, Maria. And what are ways that our listeners could kind of connect with you and follow your work? Are you active on TikTok or it's somewhere else?
No, I try to be a bit active on LinkedIn, but time doesn't allow me to do as much as I would like to do. But every now and then I post and I'm reachable that way.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time and for the work that you do at Volvo Cars.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.